I'm talking to Maureen Sanders, who has been on Women's Focus before, so welcome back.
Thanks for having me today, Susan.
We have four women who are running for Court of Appeals in the election that's coming up, and I thought it would be interesting to talk about what the Court of Appeals is all about and what being a judge is about.
Sure. And before I start, let me mention one thing. There's actually five women running for the Court of Appeals. One of them, Judge Atrip, is currently sitting on the Court of Appeals, and she has no opponent this year, but she will be on the ballot. So there are four running in contested races. And so the Court of Appeals is really, in some ways, the hub of appellate decisions in New Mexico. It's the place where cases that have been in the district court, which have been decided by either a judge or a jury, go as their first round of appeal. And so most of the time, every party in a criminal or a civil case has a right to one appeal. Okay, there are certain times for DAs that the prosecution doesn't have a right to appeal always, but generally everybody has a right to one appeal, and that one appeal is generally to the Court of Appeals. After that, once the Court of Appeals decides something, then there are times when parties to a lawsuit can take it up to the Supreme Court, but that is discretionary and technically isn't called an appeal. It's called a writ of certiorari, which I don't even know what that word means. But the Supreme Court doesn't have to take it. So you have a right to one appeal, and after that it becomes discretionary. So the Supreme Court, to contrast it with the Court of Appeals, takes cases where perhaps the Court of Appeals didn't agree, it was a 2-1 decision or something, or it's a new area of law that hasn't been decided, those kinds of things in the civil context. That's what the Supreme Court hears. The other exception is that there are sometimes direct appeals in criminal cases that go directly to the Supreme Court. But other than that, most appeals are held in the New Mexico Court of Appeals.
But aren't there some cases sometimes where the Supreme Court decides to take it up right away because it's some public decision that they're making and they're making law?
There are. Usually that's by a writ as opposed to necessarily an appeal, where it is possible. For example, the same-sex marriage case got up to the Supreme Court on a writ of superintending control relating to needing to have one rule across the state for issuance of marriage certificates on same-sex marriage. So most of the time, it's on a writ. There are times when maybe the parties take an appeal to the Court of Appeals, and either the Court of Appeals says to the Supreme Court, you know, this is a matter of public importance, and you've never decided it before, Supreme Court, so why don't you just go ahead and take it now? And they will do that.
Let's talk about why you might make an appeal, because I think people sort of think that you make an appeal because you're mad that you didn't get your way in the lower court, but it's different reasons than that.
That could be one of the reasons. I think that I have taken an appeal for, you know, as an attorney for my client because I was mad, but, you know, I think most of the time it's because there's some area of the law that isn't quite as clear as it could be, and so both parties presented their issues to a trial court judge and usually had a trial, and it was decided one way. But reasonable people may have been able to decide it the other way. And so the trial court has to follow what the Court of Appeals has previously said on those issues or what the Supreme Court has said on those issues. So sometimes an appeal is taken to say to the Court of Appeals, hey, Court of Appeals, you got it wrong the last time you looked at this, and we'd like for you to look at it again. It also tells us something about the Court of Appeals, because the New Mexico Supreme Court is the highest court in the state, and when they have ruled on something already, the New Mexico Court of Appeals has an obligation generally to follow what the Supreme Court has said. So sometimes the Court of Appeals may make a decision, and one of the judges may write something that says, I don't agree with what the Supreme Court said in the past, but I'm bound to follow it. And that might be a hint to the Supreme Court that maybe they should take it.
Some of the appeals are because you think that something wrong was done during your case, right? That the judge made a mistake.
That's true. Some appeals do come because the parties say, hey, the trial court made a mistake. And if you think about it, a trial court has trials, okay? And sometimes they make decisions without a whole trial. But most of the time it is a trial. And that means you have evidence and you have the witnesses and the parties all there. And they present evidence and either the judge makes a decision or the jury makes a decision. But even in a jury trial, the judge makes lots of decisions leading up to that jury trial. Mm-hmm. And so there are times where you go, you know, dear trial court judge, I disagree with how you decided that issue. I should have been able to put that evidence on for my client. Mm-hmm. And so that's the issue on appeal. In the Court of Appeals, just so everybody's clear, it's just lawyers talking. The Court of Appeals sits in panels of three. And so three judges will be in the courtroom, and they will hear the arguments of counsel. There aren't any witnesses. There is no jury. It is just the arguments of counsel. And counsel technically can only bring up what was already argued in the trial court before.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Can I say something about how things happen in the Court of Appeals? The hearings that the Court of Appeals have look much different than what you see at a trial court level because it is only the lawyers talking to the judges. Mm-hmm. About those cases, and you're given time limits, and it usually takes less than an hour for the whole argument.
The people running for Court of Appeals have various experience. Some of them are judges or have been a judge, but not all of them. Some of them have clerked for various judges, and it strikes me that having clerked for a judge is probably a good preparation for being a judge in the Court of Appeals because it's pretty technical.
I think it is one good experience to have if you want to be an appellate court judge that you've actually been a law clerk to one of the appellate courts, either the Court of Appeals or the New Mexico Supreme Court. And to expand on that a little bit, you know, when you call yourself a law clerk, you're not one that is just accepting papers or something like that. You're actually sitting there doing the research and helping the judge draft opinions. And so you've been through that process of trying to write an opinion or draft an opinion for a judge. And it's a very different kind of writing and use of law mm-hmm. than if you're an advocate. If I'm an advocate for a client, I'm going to argue my client's side. But when you're writing for a judge, you have to sort of recognize that one side says this is the way it ought to be, and the other side says no, it shouldn't, it should be another way. And you have to weed through those arguments and try and figure out, okay, what is the current law right now? What has the New Mexico Supreme Court said, or what have previous New Mexico Court of Appeals decisions said about this particular issue? And how can I apply it to this case? And what is the right decision for the judge to make at this point? And so it is a really good background to have if you are going to be applying to or seeking election as a Court of Appeals judge. But it's not the only experience that's important. You know, for me, what's important is to have a Court of Appeals that altogether have a breadth of experience, you know. And so, you know, if you think about what kind of cases the Court of Appeals has, it has criminal cases, it has civil cases, it has a lot of administrative appeals. You know, if anybody's ever been denied a license or denied, you know, a professional license or a liquor license, or they wanted to challenge a regulation, all those kinds of things, those kinds of issues all come up before the New Mexico Court of Appeals. And so it's important for there to be diversity amongst the various judges so that they can pull on each other's experience.
It's kind of boring, isn't it?
Being a Court of Appeals judge? It can be boring, okay? This is how I would say it. If you're a real big people person and you like being out there and you like being talking to people all the time, then the Court of Appeals is probably not the right place for you because you spend your day writing opinions as a Court of Appeals judge. And so that means you're researching and you're writing. And you talk to your law clerks and you hopefully talk to the other judges on the court about the opinions that you're working on. But other than that, you don't really talk to anybody about what you're doing because you're not allowed to under the judicial ethics rules, you know. So if you don't like reading, writing opinions, then and researching, then you shouldn't be a Court of Appeals judge.
I want to talk a little bit about writing opinions, because I didn't realize how you could really make law by the way you write opinions until I had a discussion with you about the opinion that Judge Pam Minsner wrote about the Medicaid case, the case for funding Medicaid abortions. And she used the ERA for the first time that it had been used, I think.
I'm not one of those who is quick to say somebody made law as a judge, because my view of what a good appellate judge does, particularly, is that they interpret the law. And so in New Mexico, we had an equal rights amendment that had been passed in the 70s, thanks to the work of many people that are still around. And that law said that you could not discriminate against people on the basis of sex. We were one of many states that passed an ERA. Unfortunately, not enough states passed it, so it did not become part of the United States Constitution, but we do have it in New Mexico. And it had never been interpreted by the courts. So the issue before Justice Minsner, who was then on the New Mexico Supreme Court, was whether or not the Equal Rights Amendment of the New Mexico Constitution required the state to provide medically necessary abortions to indigent women. And the argument was essentially that if you're going to provide the medical necessities of men under the Medicaid program, then you also had to provide all of the medical necessities of women under the Medicaid program. Otherwise, you would be discriminating against women in not providing their medical care.
Okay. But as I remember, there was something else that she could have used. There was another part of the law that she could have referred to. And by choosing the ERA, she kind of enshrined it.
There were some other areas that we had raised. I was involved in that case, and so we had raised an equal protection argument and perhaps a due process argument. You know, frankly, in leading up to the arguments and awaiting the decision of the New Mexico Supreme Court, our money was on the decision being rested on one of the other provisions. But we were very ecstatic that Justice Minsner did go with the ERA, because it gave us our first opinion on what does the ERA mean in New Mexico. And so it's been used a few times in appellate opinions, but not very often still. But I will say that we use it often in our day-to-day cases to let people know, let government entities know, that they are violating the ERA and in making those kinds of decisions that they have made. So it has a life.
Okay. So that another point is that what the judges do and the way they express themselves affects not only court cases, but it affects how people handle other things, because they're sort of thinking of what might go to court.
That's absolutely true. And I think that's a good way to distinguish what happens in a trial court versus what happens in an appellate court. In a trial court, the decision is made only on the dispute between those two parties. When a judge writes a decision in an appellate court, the judge is in fact deciding the dispute between the two parties, but they're writing an opinion that is going to have what we call precedential effect for people who are involved in disputes down the road. Now, those future disputes don't always end up in court, because the Court of Appeals or the New Mexico Supreme Court has decided an issue of law. And by deciding that issue of law, they take away the necessity of going to court in the next case, because the law has already been decided.
Okay. I've heard some people say that the Court of Appeals is more important than the Supreme Court.
I know why people say that. I'm not sure I want to say that in case many New Mexico Supreme Court justices are listening today. But I think it is more important in this way. It decides many more cases than the New Mexico Supreme Court. And so those precedents that are being decided are far-reaching and have many more, like I say, cases before the New Mexico Court of Appeals. Now, some of them are decided in ways that don't have as much precedential value as others. I think in 2017, the Court of Appeals had 826 new cases. And so some of those cases will be decided on what they call a summary calendar, where it's not a full briefing, but sort of a mini view of things, and say, you know, we've looked at this, and, you know, parties, you haven't given us any reason that we would have to look at this in a complete fashion, because there's no new law that you've raised in here. Mm-hmm. It's already been decided. We decided that 10 years ago, and so there's no reason going through a full appeal on this case, and so therefore we're going to either affirm the district court or reverse the district court. Mm-hmm. So some cases are decided on a summary basis, but many of them are decided with a full briefing and a oral argument. And the types of cases that the Court of Appeals hears is a real variety. I mean, they get a lot of children's court cases. They get the appeals from the pre-hearing detention cases that are in the newspaper a lot these days. So they get all of those appeals and sometimes have very short deadlines on those.
Should we know more about the judges whose opinions are getting reversed or whose trials are getting reversed?
I think we should all know more about judges in any event whenever there's a, you know, an election or an appointment coming up. I'm not one who is quick to say, oh, just because some district court judge has gotten reversed, that means that they made a bad decision. Because sometimes the district court or the trial court looks at the issue before them and says, you know, I think the Court of Appeals already ruled and this is how I'm going to rule. But, you know, it's nuanced because, you know, you're never presented with the exact same set of facts. And so it might be that the trial court felt like they should follow the previous decision of the Court of Appeals. But then when it gets up to the Court of Appeals may say, you know, the facts presented in this current case are a little different than our previous one. We understand why the district court thought that we meant A the last time, but under these facts, we think the right decision is B. Therefore, we are going to reverse and remand it for trial.
You do training through Emerge to women who are thinking about running to be judges. Could you tell a little bit about what you say about what they should do, what the advice you give them?
Sure. One of the things that's really hard about running for judge in New Mexico is that it is a partisan election process. And we want to make sure that our judges who we elect are in fact going to be fair. And so we have rules of judicial conduct that pretty much say that judicial candidates cannot make statements while they're running on issues that may become before them in the future. And so it's difficult to run for a judgeship because what you have to say often is, I'm sorry, I can't comment on that. And, you know, I know that you would want me to be fair. And, you know, because of the nuances that often exist, it doesn't matter what my personal beliefs are on something. What I have to do is follow the law. And so, like I say, it's difficult as a candidate to say it in a way that people don't get upset because they think you're not answering the question. You're right, they aren't answering the question, but they're not allowed to under the Judicial Code of Conduct. But I think it's really important as a judicial candidate to let the people know who you are and what you stand for in terms of what are your values and that you're a good public speaker. And those kinds of things are the things that we spend time in Emerge in training judicial candidates.
Why a good public speaker?
I think
some
you don't.
People don't get mad at you.
Yes, exactly. I think it's not so important in your everyday job as a New Mexico, you know, as a Court of Appeals judge, for example. If it's another kind of judge, then you are out in the public a lot. And so, if you're a trial court judge, you have to be able to think on your feet because you're not going to have the luxury of going back to your room and thinking about this and doing the research. You're going to have to make decisions on the fly, and you're going to have to be able to articulate the reasons for your decisions. Similarly, in the New Mexico Supreme Court, the Supreme Court has lots of obligations and duties in addition to writing opinions, and some of those include some public speaking on behalf of the judiciary. Also, when you get into leadership positions within the judiciary, you end up before the legislature, and so it's always best to be a good public speaker when you're in front of the legislature.
The Court of Appeals, I think people don't know too much about what they do, but there are some judges that people get mad at some of the decisions they make, and groups form around protesting those judges. So it seems like you'd also have to have a thick skin.
You do have to have a good skin, I think, to be a judge at any level, particularly in this era where it seems like people are making sport of, you know, attacking our judiciary, and they're forgetting that the judiciary is really a third branch of government. It's not just a state agency. And they have certain responsibilities, and they have responsibilities to the public and to the litigants before them, and they have an obligation to follow the law. And I know of opinions that, you know, judges agonize over because they have to come out with a decision that is contrary to their own personal beliefs, mm-hmm. but that's the way the law is when applied to the facts before them. Mm-hmm. And that's very hard. I'm one that thinks that, you know, we shouldn't have jumped to a public outcry when we don't like a decision in a particular case. And we really have to sit back and look and say, okay, what did the judge have before him or herself that when they were making that decision? And sometimes through the fault of the parties or through the reality of what was known at the time, there wasn't enough presented to the court to make a decision that you would have liked.
How do we stand?
In terms of finding out about who we should vote for? So I guess a couple things. One is when you're out on the campaign trail or, you know, listening to people who are on the campaign trail, talk to them about what their experience is. What's their involvement in the community? What do they care about? What have they done in the past, you know? Those kinds of things, listen to them and see if they make any sense. You know, if they're not making any sense, then maybe they shouldn't be a judge, you know, and maybe you shouldn't vote for them. So that's one thing. The other thing is we have what's called JPEC, which is something like Judicial Performance Evaluation Committee. And every year before the election, they will come out with their review of those that are on the ballot. And, you know, you can find out a lot about how people within the system and outside the system, judicial system, views that particular judge. And so they will be rated by their colleagues, their coworkers, their staff, the lawyers who appear before them, the litigants who appear before them. And we should look to see what are their scores for their judicial temperament? What are their scores for their intellectual legal reasoning? It's some category like that. You know, how do they treat people? And are they viewed and respected in the legal community? Because if you really think about it, it's the legal community that has to go over to the courthouses every day. And they deal with the various judges. And so ask your lawyer friends, you know, what do you think about this judge? And if they say, oh, you know, and just say something flippant, you know, say, no, I really want to know, you know, are they smart? Do they treat people well? Do they make sense? And do they, you know, do they treat the jurors right? You know, those mm-hmm. kinds of things are all something that all goes into whether or not somebody is a good judge.
Okay. I think that's good advice, but I was thinking more in terms of how does our judiciary stack up against other states? Do we have a good judiciary?
I have grave concerns about the judiciary, not anybody in particular sitting, but I am very concerned about the lack of applicants for the judicial positions that we've had open. And I think there's a couple things that are driving that. One is the decrease in the lack of respect provided by the community towards the judiciary. Everybody's wanting to lash out at the judiciary and not understanding how hard of a job that they have. And so people tend not to seek jobs that don't show any respect. We've seen that happen in our education system. You know, if we don't treat teachers with respect, then fewer people want to be teachers. And it's the same thing in the judiciary. I think a second thing is that we are very low when comparing our judicial salaries with the salaries in our surrounding states or the states around the country. For example, the Court of Appeals last year, I think it was 50th in the country in terms of judicial pay for intermediate appellate courts. And, you know, that's not a good signal to send, because if we don't pay people appropriately, then those who have the intellectual capacity and the judicial temperament and those sorts of things won't be applying for the jobs. We also did something, in my view, which was unfortunate several years ago, and we changed the retirement system for the judges. And it used to be if you had been a judge for 15 years, years, you would essentially get full retirement. And the thought was, let's attract people who are about 50 to come in and be a judge for 15 years, give back to their community, maybe after their kids are out of college and that sort of thing. And then they have a retirement for themselves after the 15 years. We changed it now where it's up to about 24 years that you have to serve. And so that means that, you know, people who are wanting to give back to the community don't have the ability to last 24 years before getting a retirement. So here's what I want. I want you all to go out and vote on November 7th, I think it is, and maybe 6th. It's somewhere. I think it's November 6th. So I want you to go out and vote and take a look at the material available about the judicial candidates and, you know, make your decision. Talk to your lawyer friends. Some people don't like to admit that they have lawyer friends, but, you know, we all do. And so talk to them and see what they think and be an informed voter and cast a vote on November 6th.
Okay, good.